You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
On this Wednesday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. We tried. We failed. Three-peat. We got to come up with T-shirts here. Wasn't it Pat Riley who came up with the phrase he trademarked three-peat? How do you do it in a losing way?
Three defeat. You could do that.
Thank you, Todd. We were up for the Sports Emmys last night. It was for Best Daily Studio Show, and we were in with heavy hitters there. Pardon the interruption, SportsCenter, MLB Tonight, Outside the Lines. And we had a great night, except for like the last, I don't know, 5 minutes of our day together. Here is the announcement last night as we go down in flames yet again.
The nominees for Outstanding Studio Show Daily are...
The Dan Patrick Show, BR Live, DirecTV, NBCSN, MLB Tonight, MLB Network,
still thinking he might get thrown at.
NHL Live, NBC, NBCSN.
The Blackhawks and the Bruins coming down this very tunnel.
Outside the Lines, ESPN.
Over the years, as Lee's stature grew.
Pardon the interruption. ESPN.
When Tiger hits a shot on 16, they rise.
SportsCenter. ESPN.
For the past 5 years.
And the Emmy goes to MLB Tonight, MLB Network.
It was awkward because...
Yeah, it was.
It was really awkward because I didn't know how to react. I was not happy. Paulie, how would you describe my reaction?
Okay, you're a professional, Dan. You've been at a lot of award shows, and you've won a lot.
And I've lost a lot,
you've
too.
You've lost a lot, but you've won a lot. So to paint the picture, there's Dan Patrick in front of a basically like a Zoom link. So you could see all the candidates. Everyone's up there. And then the four Danettes are right behind you. And when they say, MLB Tonight, you go, oh, kind of have like you got something stuck in your shoe. And then you realize you're on camera and go,
yep.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so used to being off camera when I go, are you kidding me? And then I start to applaud. Yeah, they caught me there.
You went,
It was real.
It was. And that's why we had a watch party, a viewing party last night. By the way, thanks for everybody who tuned in. We had, you know, like at one point, I think the big German said 8,000 people were watching us watching the Sports Emmys. But the backroom guys did a great job. We had about an hour and a half show, red carpet treatment, and Mario did a great job. Marvin, the big German, Dylan, Tyler, everybody, Alan, just all the people behind the scenes did a wonderful job there. And my thanks to them. We had fun last night. It's just great spending time with everybody. Paulie brought his family. My wife and two of my daughters came by to watch us lose. And three-peat, 0-for-3. There's always next year. But I keep saying it's bad for our brand if we win, because we get a lot of mileage out of this. Can you imagine what this is going to be like next year? If we go Buffalo Bills on the Sports Emmys? You know, the Cubs lost their brand when they won. Cleveland with LeBron lost their brand when they won. Yes, Todd.
The Bills at least can say even though they lost all of them, they have four straight AFC championship titles. I don't know what we have. If you don't win the Emmy, there's really no prize of any kind.
Yeah, but a nomination is like an AFC title, I think. I mean, that's how I'm going to categorize this. Yes, McLovin.
Jim Kelly made the Hall of Fame.
Well, I'm already going into the Hall of Fame.
You know, Andre Reed also made it, which might be good for us, Danettes.
You guys probably won't go into the Hall of Fame. Maybe as a show if they induct us, but yeah. I mean, that I'm hopeful for that. But last night was fun, and everybody who tuned in, a lot of support. There are a lot of snarky friends that I have that gave me a couple of shots there last night. Hey, congrats, 0-for-3. And I went, thank you. But there's always next year when we'll get them. But welcome to the program, already in progress. No, we've had a lot of fun last night and this morning, just recapping some of the events that have taken place over the last year on the program and all the great people who were responsible or part of this program. And my thanks to them. This is the last year that we worked with DirecTV, and we had to say goodbye to them officially last night because what we did this past year was the tape that we submitted. I like that everybody submitted serious things, like really great analysis. I got Paulie being tackled by Brian Urlacher. That's part of our tape. You know, we went from me telling you about my health problems and getting emotional on the air, Paulie getting tackled by Brian Urlacher. Meanwhile, some of these other shows had really hardcore sports analysis there.
I didn't see Harold Reynolds getting hit by Brian Urlacher.
All righty. All right. A lot to dive into today. By the way, next great podcast. A lot of great nominees here that you've submitted your pitch. A lot of great possibilities here. NextGreatPodcast.com. We're going to select up to 10 semifinalists, give you $1,000 each, produce a pilot episode. Then listeners from around the country will vote to decide the next great podcast. I'm going into business with the winner. I'll be there with you as an executive producer. NextGreatPodcast.com. I hope to work with you. Doesn't have to be sports related. It just has to be interesting. So take me up on the opportunity. If you've always wanted to have somebody listen to your idea, now you have that opportunity. Coming up, we'll talk to Rick Neuheisel, CBS Sports, former college football coach. His thoughts on the Big Ten Pac-12 shutting things down for the fall. Kirk Herbstreit, who won a sports Emmy last night for Best Analyst. And you talk about a great category. That's where you have Tony Romo's in there. Chris Collinsworth wins just about every year. I mean, Troy Aikman was in there. There's so many great analysts. And Herbie ended up winning it. So Kirk will join us coming up. And Joe Montana. We thought we'd have somebody who's won something. So Joe Montana, who is 4-0 in Super Bowls, will join us to make fun of us being losers. So that's coming up in a little bit. The Big Ten Pac-12 announced that football will be called off for the fall. We'll see if other conferences follow suit. But don't think for a second that this is the end of the story, because there are so many questions about what's next. Are they going to play in the spring? Can you play in the spring? If you were a player, would you play in the spring? Do players go home? Do they stay on campus? Can they work out while they're on campus? Can players try to compete elsewhere if there's no place else to go right now? What about the long-term impact on the sport? What about the NFL draft? What am I going to do on Saturdays, more importantly? And depending on what happens, the NFL could fill some of that TV time spreading out their schedule, but it's impossible to replace the games we become so used to. And there's going to be a void in the life of many sports fans, but hopefully one day soon we'll be able to be on the other side of this pandemic and our day-to-day lives will return to normal, whatever that means, which means building our weekends around college football. As I told you on Monday morning when I got the information that the Big Ten and Pac-12 were going to announce on Tuesday that they were canceling their seasons, which obviously happened. And I didn't know about the ACC or SEC other than I was told by my source they are going full speed ahead. Notre Dame is planning on playing football. And then I said, what about the Big 12? And my source at the time said, they're on the fence right now. You have Oklahoma and Texas who want to play, not quite sure about the rest of the Big 12. This is what I got from my source this morning. This is from a Big 12 coach. Quote, when this happens, it separates the ACC, SEC, Big 12 from the others forever. That sounds like the Big 12 is playing. It's all fluid. It can change. I've said that from the outset. In fact, on Tuesday morning, when the Big 10 presidents were going to be voting again, I was told by my source they're trying to delay this. It was happening in real time when he was giving me the information. They were doing their best to go spring football or delay. And then the consensus was we're not going to be playing football. But I also told you from the beginning, my source said the Pac-12 did not want to be the first conference to cancel. They didn't want the optics to look like, well, the Pac-12 is sort of lesser conference of the Power Five conference. And you saw what happened. The Big Ten announced it first, and then the Pac-12 followed. Do I think the ACC and SEC are going to play? I do. I do right now. And I was asked this question last night by a former coach. And he said, is it a good thing what happened with the Pac-10 or Pac-12 and the Big Ten? Is it a good thing what's happening with the SEC and ACC? And I said, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at this and trying to be objective. if you can play it and they're going to be safe, because the former coach said they're going to be safer on campus. Now, he's all for everybody playing. And he said, you know, the biggest problem is I don't know how much thought the presidents of the Big Ten schools gave this, believe it or not. How much dialogue they had. Because it feels like the SEC and ACC, they're in lockstep here. And I know that the Big 12 is just not quite sure, but Oklahoma and Texas want to play, and they run that conference. Can you get everybody else to fall in line? But the safety protocols, from what we hear with the SEC and ACC, you know, we're not finding that there are very many positive tests here. I would love to have the medical community, the doctors with the ACC and SEC, get together with the Pac-12 and Big Ten doctors, and I would just love to have them talk to one another. Because what's the difference? Or what are the differences? Because I don't know. But if the ACC and SEC has medical communities that are saying we can do this, then why can't the Pac-12 or Big Ten? And I'm being objective with this. I don't know what is the right or wrong answer, because I don't know. We may look back and say, ACC and SEC pulled this off. The NFL, I believe, will pull this off. They're going to start. I don't know if they'll finish, but they're going to start. There might be an interruption. Soccer's pulled it off. Hockey's pulled it off. The NBA's pulled it off. Golf. I know it's different. Baseball, not so much. But I don't have a right answer here. And I may not have that until the end of this year. But I think the Big 12 is really important to keep an eye on them, because if you have the Big 12 and you have the ACC and you have the SEC, you can have a college football season. And I think it comes down to that. If you have almost 40 teams who are going to be competing, and these are marquee teams as well. I mean, we lose out on the Big Ten. And that really comes down to you lose out on Ohio State. You know, you might say Wisconsin, Michigan State had a down year, Michigan, who knows. But, you know, Pac-12, maybe you get one or two really good teams out of there. But this, you know, you could make an argument. The ACC and SEC, when they're done with their conferences, those two teams who win are going to play for the national championship. But if I have Clemson, Alabama, and LSU, I throw in Oklahoma, I'm fine. I mean, that's pretty much the final four. I'm good with that. I don't have an answer. I don't know what's right and wrong. I know what I thought is possible, not possible, but just trying to figure this out. And what is strange is when somebody says this to me yesterday, in fact, people responded, it's like, you know, they need a commissioner. You know, college football needs a commissioner. I said, they have a president. I mean, we could rename him and just say he's a commissioner, but Mark Emmert has disappeared. I haven't seen anything from him, heard anything from him. Fritzy calls, you got him on speed dial, I think. We're always saying, can we get the president of the NCAA on? He's always unavailable, but we're trying, because I'm just trying to get answers here, just to understand it. You know, somebody said yesterday, what about fans? Man, let's hold off. Let's just get football players first on the field. And then if you get an opportunity where you can put in 20,000 fans. But I don't know where we are right now with college football, other than when we had Greg Sankey on. Why is it the SEC commissioner is so readily available? Nobody else was. Is. Because he's playing football this year. ACC, sounds like they're playing football. Source yesterday, I said, where's Notre Dame? Notre Dame is ready to go. That was the comment. Ready to go. And I go, okay, they're already back at school. Ready to go. Source said, if you watch Notre Dame workout practice, you wouldn't think that there was anything wrong, that they're ready to go to play football. And I went, all right. So I don't know if the Big Ten, Pac-12 made the right decision or not. If they made the decision for the health and well-being of the student-athlete, great. How much money was involved in this decision? How many conversations did the presidents have with one another is what I wanted to know. And from what I was told, not many. And that's why you had this vote. You had the presidents voting, and they voted 12-2 in the Big Ten. 12 said no, 2 said yes, Iowa and Nebraska. And then they went, and I was told that I mobilized college football. My source said, you know what? You mobilized college football. You got the players, coaches, and athletic directors on the same page, which never happens. And you got these presidents to reconsider their votes. Didn't change it because my source said they had already made the decision. They were too far down the road in both of those conferences. But your comments when you broke the story on Monday mobilized college football. So for those who've said, oh, yeah, you got what you wanted. There's no college football. I don't want this. I need college football. I'm hopeful that we have college football. I wanted to be wrong with this. But when I got that information from somebody that I trust, I had to share it on Monday morning. I took no glee, no pride in that, other than we do our homework here. And when I tell you something, I've done my homework. But I didn't come away feeling good about that on Monday. In fact, I felt worse. Hated saying that. And then it turned out to be true yesterday when we heard that Pac-10, the Pac-12 and Big Ten were going to shut things down. All right, McClubbin, you got a poll question for me. By the way, phone number is 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle at dpshow. Say good morning to Chat Row, those watching on youtube.com/thedanpatrickshow. And our great radio affiliates around the country. All right, McClubbin.
I do have a poll. Can I share some research I've done trying to rival my Ethan? I pulled a little Ethan.
Wait, you did research?
Yes, I did research.
Okay.
You mentioned the impact on the Final Four. There have been 6 years of Final Four in college football. There's only been three teams outside of the Big 12, ACC, and SEC. And that was in 2015, Oregon, 16 Michigan State, and 17 Washington. And only one of those teams won a game, Oregon in 14-15, and then they got beat in the title game. So it's all the Final Four is always ACC, SEC, Big 12.
Well, you're throwing Notre Dame in there, but yes. Notre Dame wasn't in the ACC.
I counted Notre Dame just as in.
Okay.
So you're right. Like it really, you could have the same Final
yes.
Four.
All four of the 2019 playoff teams are still planning on playing in 2020. Alabama, Oklahoma, Clemson, Notre Dame. All four of the 2018 playoff teams still plan on playing in 2020. Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Georgia.
So does this mean, I'm sorry, will there be a Final Four if those three teams, there will be, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to guess it's still scheduled. I can try to find that out, but I don't have any information. You know, we're just trying, call Mark Emmett, the president of the NCAA. Maybe he could join us.
Just sent him another note.
I'm sure you did. He's unavailable.
But today, Todd has the poll question.
Is Mark Emmert unavailable the rest of his life?
It's quite possible.
Because if that's true, then we won't call anymore.
Well, maybe after he retires, he feels more comfortable addressing these issues. But right now, unavailable.
We'll track him down and be like 90 years old. Hey, Mark, could you come on?
Unavailable. Isn't that the 10-2 spot on FS2? Unavailable.
Is that the show that follows Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp?
I think so.
Unavailable.
I still love what Paulie says. What do you mean he's out of the country? There's no phones. There's no technology outside the United States.
Paulie won't take. He will not take. No,
I respect that. That's the right attitude.
He will not take unavailable as an answer. Yeah, Paulie.
Not in 2020, I won't.
No. Nope.
You know, I've sent back notes before. I'm like, Dan can tape the interview anytime, 24 hours a day. He's at the ready when your guy can call.
He can't do it. Is he injured? Did something happen to him?
We came in at 5 o'clock a couple of days ago to tape Colin Morikawa. That was the only time he was available. It was 5 in the afternoon. I said, we'll do it. Get the big German fired up.
Yep.
And I said, let's go. Yeah, Paul.
I've been calling Mark Emmert Kaiser Soze for years. He's all powerful. You never see him. You don't know what he does exactly. No one's known anyone who's seen him or talked to him.
All right, let's take a break. I got Rick Neuheisel who's going to join us.
I was going to give you my poll thought for a second there.
Why about we take a break? And why didn't you raise your hand?
I should have.
What happened to you?
I don't know. Should I tease what the poll might be about?
You know what's going to happen?
This is a colossal mistake.
Yes, it is.
This is a huge mistake.
Okay, all right.
I can't do this all morning. Like, I'm going to get the thing.
Are you overcompensating?
The flirty poll question with Todd. I can't do this morning.
Are you overcompensating for last night's loss?
Probably. I sent you a bunch of Damian Lillard stats. I'm just trying to put my hands in all kinds of stuff. Poll questions.
Damian Lillard went off for 61 against the Mavs. Todd sends me a full page of notes here. I go, what are you doing?
More stats than you could even get to in like one show.
You know what I always tell you, Todd? Do less. You're really good at
you
that.
You have told me that.
Yes, I have. All right. We'll take a break. Todd has an unbelievable poll question.
Wow, I don't know about that, but it's pretty good.
No, you're the one selling it. Take a break here. 21 after the hour. Your phone calls will be welcome as well. Kirk Herbstreit will join us. Joe Montana a little bit later on. 22 after
I have a poll question for you. Would you rather eternally lose the sports Emmy or listen to Todd's poll question today?
Oh.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's start there with Rick Neuheisel, CBS Sports College football analyst and a man who always makes me smarter every time I talk to him about football. Rick, how are you this morning?
EP, I'm well, and I want to congratulate you on that great showing last night at the Sports Emmys.
Thank you.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
For those of us who were not even nominated, we're just thrilled that you had that kind of evening.
All right, so SEC, ACC, Big 12 still trying to play football is admirable or reckless?
You know, that's to each his own. For me, it's admirable because I still haven't seen any statistic that tells me that a college football player is any safer not playing football. I mean, there's the thing that strikes me as I look at what the Pac-12 and Big Ten did yesterday is that many of these campuses are inviting students back. They're going to be in on-campus housing. How are you protecting them from COVID-19 any more than you can be protecting your football team? Given all the protocols and all the testing numbers that seem so positive, Jim Harbaugh gave out a list of his numbers. We had Lance Leipold on, the head coach at Buffalo. Of course, the MAC has decided not to play. He said 662 tests, 3 positives. I mean, those numbers seem reasonable, but it's all your risk tolerance. And so I'm with the kids that want to play. I'm with the coaches that want to coach. I'm with the schools that think that they can do this as safely as the NBA is going forward, as safely as National Hockey League's going forward. I think it can be done.
What do you think the collateral damage is going to be to the Big Ten and Pac-12?
Well, as a Pac-12 apologist, I feel very fortunate that the Big Ten's with them. I had fear that it was going to be the Pac-12 alone. And that would have been absolutely devastating for their brand long term. The fact that the Big Ten has chosen not to play football in the fall is helpful to the Pac-12 because it gives them some cover. But I think what both those conferences have to do is tell us what happened in the 5 days since or 6 days since the Big Ten released a schedule. What new medical information do they have? Because if it is, in fact, new medical information, the rest of these conferences deserve to have it as well.
And that's what I wanted to know. If I got the doctors from the ACC and SEC to get together with the doctors, medical community, with the Big Ten and Pac-12, I would just love to have that information disseminated. Just so,
100%.
Like, I want to know. We need to know this information because you got – if I'm sending my kids back to an ACC and SEC school – or I'm sending him to a Pac-12 or Big Ten school, feels like there's a different feel in those communities here. And I'd love for those doctors to kind of cross-pollinate here with information.
Absolutely. It's like watching news today in our country. Depending on what channel you turn on, you're going to get a flavor of news. And now we're getting flavors of medical information. And I think that's ridiculous. This is too important to not know everything there is to know. But it is concerning when you have doctors that are saying this is doable, this is achievable, and there's no reason not to proceed. And then you have two conferences yesterday stand up in front of us and say it's just not safe. It makes us all wonder what happened, especially when you go through the process of creating a schedule with all sorts of flexibility built in for what was going to be perceived as spikes in COVID cases so that you could move games and such. And now all of a sudden you're deciding elsewhere. You wonder if the conspiracy theorist in all of us wonders if there's something else afoot.
I wonder if Jim Delaney was still the Big Ten commissioner if this would have happened, Rick.
Interesting question. And what also is interesting about the Big Ten as opposed to the Pac-12 is all the disconnect, right? Over the weekend, all these coaches coming out and speaking, they want to save their programs. Ryan Day, Scott Frost, James Franklin, Jim Harbaugh, that, you know, those are power programs. And those guys, and even today, Nebraska looking for another place to play. That is as disharmonious as you can imagine in the early portions of Kevin Warren's tenure there.
We're talking to Rick Neuheisel, CBS Sports college football analyst, and, of course, former college coach. If you were back at UCLA or Colorado or Washington, like, what would you be doing? What would you be saying?
You'd be trying to hang on to players because you have to wonder if you're Penei Sewell, the star offensive tackle for Oregon, if he's not getting a bunch of phone calls right now. I mean, there's no way that the NCAA is going to stop anybody from transferring if this was going to be, in fact, their last year in college. There's no place to play here at in Eugene. Can I go to Alabama?
Could Justin Fields go back to Georgia?
I think absolutely. And I if I'm Nick Saban, I'm on the phone to Justin Fields. Absolutely, I'm on the phone to Justin Fields. And Justin, you want to? I know you've got one more year. You're thinking about a glorious NFL career after that. We got a place where you can polish your skill set and get ready for that next challenge. But if I'm a coach, I'm having that conversation with my players and trying to keep as bright side a scenario as I can so that I can sustain my program.
Is it legal for Nick Saban to reach out to Justin Fields at Ohio State?
Well, legal is a term of art. He won't do it directly.
Okay.
There is a third party, right?
Okay.
The Coconut Telegraph, if you will.
How would you do it? How would you do it?
You'd go to the high school coaches. It's always go through the high school coaches and you know, in the world, it's 6 degrees of separation. In coaching, it's two. So it doesn't take long.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure this out. And then spring football, which I don't know how likely that is because I can't ask these kids. Let's say you're a sophomore now and you're going to play in the spring and then you're going to play in the fall. I would just skip the spring and play in the fall if I thought I was going into the NFL, Rick. The likelihood of the Big Ten or Pac-12 playing spring football is what?
I think less than 50%. I mean, I think we might have kind of a glorified spring game, something to, you know, a one-off type of game where you get a scrimmage, you know, where two big programs play. And I think there are a lot of people that have been looking forward to that over the years. But you just canceled seasons on the basis of health, safety, and wellness. And I guarantee you, we can go back and look at the data and talk about how many games can you play, how many collisions can you take. I mean, it wasn't so long ago concussion was on everybody's tip of their tongue and the CTE. And the first, the C stands for chronic, too many hits. You're already talking, these aren't NFL players because the NFL is getting ready to go, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know the likelihood of it.
Where is the NCAA president, Mark Emmert, in all of this?
Well, I heard you talking about Mr. Emmert, and I want you to know he's an economist, okay? Which means he has an economy of words. Like, this is disheartening. Thanks, Commissioner. This is distressing. Thanks, Commissioner. He's powerless in the world of college football. The power lies in the hands of these commissioners. He doesn't have, now, if this were college basketball, we'd be hearing more from him because they run the tournament. But in this particular case, especially with all these student activist groups out there, he's going to remain on the sideline in this deal.
Good to talk to you. Hope you're well.
I am well. And again, congratulations on that Emmy, man.
Thank you.
Awesome.
No, yeah. We lost.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize. Yeah. I got the wrong memo.
Yeah, we kind of performed the way you did when you were at Colorado and UCLA. And
went, see how you are.
Wow.
See how you are.
Wow.
Go ahead and rub it in.
Thank you, Coach.
All right, boys. Take care.
That's Rick Neuheisel.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Herbie joins us. Congratulations, Herbie. Great night for you last night. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Dan. Thanks a lot, man. Crazy day with everything going on in the morning, and then you know, to have that go on last night, that was quite a different emotional swing.
Here is how it sounded when Herbie won, and Herbie is in probably the toughest category. We're in the best daily sports show. We're in that category, but you know, Herbie's in there with the best analysts. So you got Collinsworth, who's always winning. Tony Romo's the new flavor here. I mean, Troy Aikman's in there, and here's the announcement last night.
I've won a few of these. I've never really been there to accept them. I'm like the guy that can't believe he got invited to be here with you guys. I'm just very, very appreciative of being able to do something I love.
You caught me off guard there, Herbie, and I'm sure you were caught off guard as well, but I'm watching, I'm going, good for Herbie. And then all of a sudden, I walked away, I came back, I go, what's going on? Paulie goes, no, Herbie's really emotional here. And I go, oh, well, if I win, I have to have more tears than Herbie does. And, of course, I didn't win. But why did it hit you so strong there?
Well, you know, you're staring at a computer. You're not at the ceremony. I could have very easily just kind of tipped my cap and said, hey, thanks a lot. You know, I've been really, really fortunate. You know, between game day and the ones I've won individually, I think I've won 14 now and five individual. So it's not like, oh my God, I won an Emmy. I think it was just, I don't know, just you just mentioned the names that were in that category, and every time I'm in it, they're typically the same names, and it's just a kind of a pinch me moment. Like, how the hell? Is it how am I even in this circle? And it's just gratitude. And I you know, like you, I love what I do. And I just, you know, and I think it's maybe the emotion comes from the kind of the world we're in right now. And just seeing the world that we know be challenged. I don't know. It just makes me kind of take a step back and just be grateful for what I have.
Well, it's a great moment. And look, I get emotional at if somebody opens an envelope, even if my name is not mentioned. But we are approaching the Buffalo Bills. We've gone 0-3 here. So I don't know if you have any advice on us, Herbie.
Well, you guys, I remember one year I went, and you were up against Bob Costas for like top.
Studio host. Guy. Yeah.
And I think Costas won or something like that, and you went up.
Yeah. I had written a speech, and the thing was, is Costas was actually there. But I said, yeah. I wrote this speech like 10 years ago, and I got to deliver it, and some of the people were dead on the on my list there. So I just thought, you know what, let me go up there. And Bob was fine with it because he, you know, Bob loses him. He uses them doorstops or whatever. He hands them out at Halloween, I think. with what happened yesterday, and I'm trying to figure this out, I just don't know if the Big Ten and Pac-12 have different information than the ACC, SEC, and the Big 12 have when it comes to this pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, they must. I mean, and you know, there are hot spots all over the country. You know, I know Los Angeles and California, through a lot of this, has been considered a hot spot. But I think the confusion that is out there for a lot of people is that where is the leadership in college football, right? I hear that a lot. Where is the leadership? What's going on with the NCAA? And as you know, Dan, with college football going to this Power Five, when there was all that realignment, they created the playoff. When they created the playoff, they got away from the NCAA because they became the Power Five conferences. And those Power Five conference commissioners became the leaders for college football. And I think what is very apparent to everybody is instead of having one voice, you have five silos. And those five silos are worried about just their presidents, their their players, their ADs, their coaches, basically their fans, their constituents in that region. And that's all they're concerned about. So what's happening with the Pac-12, what's happening with the Big Ten, has nothing to do with the ACC and the Big 12 and the SEC. But I'm with you. You know, we're relying on doctors. We're relying on data. We're relying on advice. We have no idea about infectious disease, right? Guys like you and I. We listen to guys like Dr. Fauci tell us what we need to know. What I found interesting yesterday is the Big Ten is doing that, and the Pac-12 is doing that, canceling. And the same day, the SEC and the ACC doctors that provide leadership for them are saying, "Oh no, no,
yeah.
we've got a clear path to play." And it makes you just go, "Wait. How do you have a clear path?" And again, I understand and respect the hotspots, but why can't all the doctors get on the same page? It's frustrating.
I just want these doctors to release the information. And I would love to have all of these doctors in the Power Five conferences, just so we know, apples to apples, what everybody's dealing with. And can it help us as everyday citizens here? Like what testing procedures are put in place? Safeguards are put in place?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I would just say that I think if we step back from the emotion of we want football, you know, and just look at what is hanging over the head of these conferences, because if you look at the data of 18 to 24-year-olds, you could very easily say, look at the data. I mean, most of these cases are asymptomatic. My kids are at Clemson. They play at Clemson. They had 40 players at one point a few weeks ago that were positive. My kids got a couple of their roommates were both positive. They got dinged to be quarantined for contact tracing, so they couldn't go over to the facility for 2 weeks. It just gives you an example of how easily you could lose an entire roster because not so much the positive cases, but the direct contact. And to me, while we all want to say they're all asymptomatic, it's not that big a deal, you know as well as I do, all it takes is two or three or four or five outliers in all of college football, kids that all of a sudden, you know, they're in the hospital, they're in intensive care, and all of a sudden that's a liability for that conference commissioner, for that athletic director, for that coach. And so that's, to me, at the end of the day, why the Pac-12 and the Big Ten pulled the plug. I think it's the risk. It's the potential risk of, yeah maybe 90% of them are okay, but what if? And now I got to look at those parents in the eye, and they're going to say, why did you greenlight us? Why did you play football knowing the risk? So I think that just the potential of that is why they decided to make that move.
He's Kirk Herbstreit, ESPN college football analyst, and he won his fifth sports Emmy last night, most of any commentator in ESPN history. If you're Justin Fields and you had the opportunity to transfer, first of all, should he get the opportunity to transfer, in your opinion? And if so, would you do it?
Well, I think all the Big Ten and the Pac-12 players should have the right to look to be able to go elsewhere just because of these extreme circumstances. You know, we're in a different era when it comes to players having freedom to be able to go to another school and not have to sit out. And these would be, to me, as extreme. This would be as extreme of a case that you can imagine. I would say this, and as far as Justin specifically, he has an incredibly close relationship with Ryan Day, not just man to man, but Ryan Day is looked at as the cutting edge in all of football when it comes to breaking down defenses and knowing how to attack them. The NFL people look at he and Lincoln Riley like, man, these guys are masterminds. And so I really think if you look at him specifically, the Justin Fields that left Georgia as a five-star, didn't beat out Jake Fromm, goes to Ohio State and becomes a Heisman candidate, comes back for this year, Heisman candidate, considered a first or second pick. He's really grown underneath Ryan Day. So I would be shocked in that case that if he would ever leave, he'd rather sit in a film room and work out with Ryan Day and continue to improve with Ryan Day than I think he would want to do elsewhere.
I would do that too. I would stay. Yeah. I'd just work out. Would you take Justin Fields over Trevor Lawrence?
Man, that's going to be the big thing. That I think it would depend on the system you know, in the NFL.
Let's
the
jump
NFL,
in early on this, Herbie. This could win you an Emmy next year.
Yeah, exactly. The NFL, man, it's crazy. You know, you go back to 10 years ago, the quarterback in the NFL was Peyton Manning. It was Tom Brady, right? I mean, these college quarterbacks coming out of the Big 12, it was like, wow, he's too small. We don't, you know, in the college, in the pro game, you got to sit in the pocket and make the throws, and you got to be 6'4". Now Kyler Murray's out there, right? I mean, Russell Wilson's out there. Lamar Jackson's out there. It's a different game for a lot of these offenses. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And a lot of these older coaches like Andy Reid, who have been West Coast guys their entire lives, got to make plays from the pocket. They're saying, well, look what the college game is giving us. I've got to alter my scheme to Patrick Mahomes coming out of Texas Tech. Instead of making him alter his game to my system, like we've been doing for 15 years, I'm going to try to learn this offense, and we're going to try to run it, and it obviously worked out really well. So I think that trend's going to continue to grow. So with that in mind, I think Justin Fields is going to be a guy that's going to be dynamic at the next level. I think his skill set, the ability to throw, the ability to run, the ability to create is very, very rare. So it'll be fun to see he and Trevor work out, and both of them, I think, are going to be superstars. But I think Justin may have a little bit of an upper hand just because of the way the NFL game is kind of trending, the direction it's going.
All right, so long-winded way of saying you might give the edge to Justin Fields over Trevor Lawrence.
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's what I want. By the way, I just got this in. Big 12 teams, their schedule, they're going to open up with a non-conference opponent. That would either be September 12th or the 19th. The conference schedule would begin September 26th, which I guess would coincide also with the SEC starting as well. But non-conference opponent, that might be, they could be playing somebody in the SEC as a non-conference opponent, I guess.
Real quick thing about people been bringing this up, and it's good for your listeners to think about. Two of the Power Five are out. Three are still standing. Would Bill Hancock and the playoff committee still have a college football playoff with three Power Five teams left?
Yes.
Now I think it's yes. You know, I don't know if they publicly said that, but I think they do that. And I think if you lose another one, maybe you don't, you know, if there's only two remaining. But if there's three, I still think you would see them move forward with a playoff.
Great to talk to you, Herbie, as always. And once again, congratulations, and hope the boys are safe there at Clemson.
Thanks, man. Great talking to you. Appreciate it.
That's Kirk Herbstreit joining us on the program.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Joe Montana here is joining us now, the four-time Super Bowl champ, Hall of Famer, of course. Have you ever worn your four Super Bowl rings at the same time?
I can't remember the last time I had one on, all four, no.
But if you go to the Super Bowl, when you're down there, or a Hall of Fame event, you're not wearing any of your rings, no?
No, none of them. Not either the Hall of Fame one either.
Where is the nearest?
Like trophies.
What?
I treat them like trophies.
Where are they right now?
In the safe, here in the house.
Do you know the combination? Can you get them out for us?
It might take me a while to think of it. See, what was my birthday again?
It's good to talk to you. We were talking about quarterbacks and how you come into the league, and it used to be you had to adapt to the coach and his style, his system. If you were coming out of Notre Dame now, would they be adapting to your style more so than the other way around?
No, I still think it happens that you walk into a system. Sorry about that. Somebody is at the door. Somebody's here early. Oh, that's my daughter dropping our granddaughter off. We got her today.
You have to go get her?
No. My wife, Jennifer's going to grab her. Yeah.
Okay.
I think you adapt to a system. I mean, you have to learn. And then, I mean, if you start having success, I think if you look at guys like Peyton, who eventually got to the point where he was able to kind of control the offense and do things he wanted to do. And I think that was, when you look at Tom, I think that's part of the reason he left, was he wanted to do things and they wanted to do something different or wouldn't allow him to do those things. And a short time I had with him on at the Super Bowl was, you know, they asked me what I want to do and I tell them and then they do something different or the opposite. So I think it was, I think that's kind of, he was looking for a little bit more control on that side. But I think that typically coming out of college, sometimes they'll adapt a little bit of what you do if it's totally different from what they do. And I mean, if you look at the 49ers and you go back and, well, not just them, but you go to Cam Newton or any of those guys that ran the read option, you know, everybody tried to do that at first. And then the defense figures out, you know, how to defend it. And the NFL didn't take them long. And so you don't see that as much as you used to see when it first became a fad in college. And then the hard part is you don't, that style doesn't really lend itself to learning how to read a defense in most cases. So I think that's why a lot of those guys struggle.
Do you think that Bill Walsh would have let you run the offense from the line of scrimmage?
Absolutely not.
Well, at least you paused for effect there, Joe.
I was trying to figure out another nice way to say it. I think that was it. There's so many plays in our game plans, and we would have 130 passes every week in a game plan. I mean, we throw about 25, 30 times at the most, and we have 130 some passes only with a couple of different formations. And so it would have been too hard to try to game plan and study the things you had to study to learn that offense you were going to run that week. So I don't think he would let me do it. He gave me full reign and control, you know, the plays in, hey, it's up to you to do something better, take advantage of something. You're free to do it as long as it works.
Did you get yelled at by Bill Walsh?
Bill didn't yell. He had this subtle way about him. I still remember it as I threw an interception in the end zone one time. And I used to go from the field right to Bill, and then I'd go to the phones and talk to the coaches upstairs. And as I was coming off the field, he had his card with all the plays on it in his hand, and he was doing this thing right here like this.
Uh-oh.
And I knew I was in trouble. And he got over there, and he said, he looked me in the eye and said, "What was that?" And I said, "I think they call that an interception." And he said, he looked deadpan, "Try not to let that happen again." I said, "Okay, I promise I won't." That was my last time going straight to Bill. From that point on, I went to the phones and then back to Bill.
But you didn't go rogue that often, did you?
No, he expected so much of the quarterback position. I didn't care if it was Steve DeBerg, me, Steve Young, Steve Bono, doesn't matter. I mean, he expected perfection out of that position, of all of them. I mean, he wanted everybody to strive for that perfect game, but more so he wanted the quarterback to be perfect, make great decisions, never make a mistake. It's not going to happen, but – you know, in areas like that, he was pretty demanding when it comes to the quarterback.
He's Joe Montana joining us on behalf of a new relationship announced today between Notre Dame and Guinness. Hey, I can relate to both of those. Beer and football. Yeah.
You got to love it. I think what a better combination, right? Two great traditions joining up to, enjoy, and hopefully we're getting ready to celebrate the coming back of football. I'm not sure it's going to happen, though. But in the same time, when you look at them, I think they both have great, great traditions behind them, looking to do the same things, commitments to making the world a better place, and also trying to get people together and enjoy it. And whether it's enjoying football or sports, we're going to do it and with a nice glass, a pint of Guinness.
And then we would have had, what was it, Navy and Notre Dame in Dublin this year.
Yep.
Got canceled.
There would have been a lot of Guinness being poured right around there, and that would have been fun. Would have loved to have seen that. So I don't know. Hopefully it still happens, but we'll see how it goes.
I've been on the Notre Dame campus on a weekend, and there wasn't much partying going on there, Joe. But when you were at Notre Dame, did you party much?
There was no partying at Notre Dame. never.
Okay. I'm going to take you at your word, Joe. You would never lie to me. You never did that, right?
You know, it's one of the biggest tailgates that, you know, that around college. I know it may not be as epic as some of the big Southern schools that like to say, but I'll tell you what, there's a lot of Guinness being consumed in those parking lots. It's fun to go back to a game. I think it's one of the most exciting places to go watch a football game. If you've never been there, the tradition just, you know, leaks out of everything as you walk around the campus. And Jennifer fell in love on Fridays. The band comes through the campus, and she just makes sure that we're there every time we go, that we're there for that scene as they come through and play the fight song through the campus. So.
Where would you have gone if it wasn't Notre Dame?
I was torn between if something had happened, and because I was dreamt to go to Notre Dame, and so as soon as they offered me, I canceled all the other schools. But I'd have probably somewhere like Michigan State or Georgia were on the top of the list at that time. But luckily for me, I didn't have to make a decision. So
where did how do you, I know you didn't lose the Super Bowl, but you're Jimmy Garoppolo. You got to a Super Bowl and you lost a Super Bowl. So What advice, and in the offseason, the front office kicked the tires on bringing in Tom Brady here.
Well, I think when if you have a chance to bring someone like Brady, obviously as successful as he's been, bringing him back home, I think that would have been a great decision for him. What does it say about Jimmy? I don't think it says much when you look at a caliber person like Tom coming in, if that was the case. But in the side of it, you know, Jimmy has to keep his head up. I mean, he played his first full season and got to a Super Bowl with them, and then played pretty well. I mean, he ended up making those guys. I think they tried to protect him too much in the Super Bowl. I'm not sure why. You know, you miss a throw. We all miss throws. Yeah, was that a big throw he missed? Yeah, it was a big throw, but that happens. He needs to stay positive and believe in himself. The worst thing you can do as a quarterback, I don't care if no one around you believes in you. The only person that has to believe in you is you. And the minute you give that up, you won't be the starter any longer. You've got to fight and stay in there and believe. And he has nothing to be ashamed of. Every year there's somebody that loses in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And every year there's a bunch of other teams that don't even get there. So, hey, be proud of the season you had and just think of, hey, next time I have that throw, I'll make it. And don't let negative things creep into your head.
I know we've had conversations before about keeping everybody happy on offense. And, you know, Jerry Rice, you have the greatest receiver of all time, keeping him happy. And, of course, Jerry was always open. That's why when I hear these stories about Antonio Brown and teams that should pick him up, it's hard to have that player as a chip on his shoulder, wants to prove everybody wrong, and you got to keep him happy there. How do you do that as a quarterback where you got that guy who keeps telling you, I'm open, and he wants to prove everybody wrong?
You try to do the best that you can to get him involved. I mean, Jerry never complained. You could tell on occasion if we hadn't thrown him a pass that there was something different going on, but he was quiet. He never said much in the huddle. And like you said, every time he said, Jerry, were you open? Yeah. You know, looking at you, he watched the video. There's three guys on him. Yeah, I was open, though. but they're all like that. They all want the ball. That's the kind of guy, though, you want, right? You want someone who wants the ball, but he can't have it all the time, right? I think teams started figuring out how to play the 49ers was to keep Jerry from getting behind everybody and putting somebody there and on him and then somebody behind him, telling him, get down the field on you. And that makes you have to go to the other side. Now, we were fortunate, though, but we had John Taylor, you know, and I feel bad for John because John was – if he had asked for a trade and gone somewhere else, he'd have been Jerry Rice. He was a freak of nature. Never said a word, though. I mean, we'd run double routes. I mean, I felt so bad for him. We'd run we don't run double routes much anyway. We'd run double comebacks with deep 25-yard outs. And John Taylor, Jerry Rice. And you look over there, and John Taylor's wide open and going, Sorry, John.
But wait, is this story true, though? When you threw the touchdown pass to John Taylor to win the Super Bowl against the Bengals, was Jerry Rice the decoy?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, the gist of the route was in the inside. And what Bill studied, well, most coaches do this, but they'll study in like a certain motion or something, and a formation will put him into a certain coverage. And that motion tended to kick them into two deep safeties. And John Taylor has a read route. So he has, if there's a single safety, he hooks to the outside. If there's split safety, takes a little nod out and then splits the safeties, trying to stay closest to the one by him. And Jerry's just really dressing on the cake to get him into that coverage.
Yeah. How did Jerry feel about being a decoy in the Super Bowl where John Taylor catches the game-winning touchdown?
I'm sure he wanted the ball too. I'm sure he was open over there on the side. you know, he's no matter much how much he wanted the ball, he still was a great team player. You know, he was so happy for John. You know, obviously, you know, he was the MVP.
Yeah.
So it didn't really matter.
And you know, one other item, we of course lost our good buddy Dwight Clark. So he took with him to the grave the secret of, were you really trying to throw the ball away against the Dallas Cowboys, Joe? I guess we're never going to know if you were, or Everson Walls, maybe if you were really trying to throw that ball away.
Well, I was trying to throw over a 6'8" guy, so
that was Ed Too Tall Jones is in your face.
And so I thought I had it soft enough up there. And when I let it go, I thought it was arm's length above his head. And everybody, I heard him scream. I forget, okay, touchdown, no big deal. And our equipment manager, when we got on the sideline, he said to me, boy, your buddy saved your ass that time. I said, what are you talking about, Chico? He goes, hey, he jumped out of the stadium to catch that pass. I'm going, Chico, he's white. He can't jump. Come on, what's going on? But, yeah, I mean, he made a great catch.
Where is that ball?
I think Dwight had it.
Oh, he
and,
did.
I mean, there's always everybody says they have it, so I'm not sure for sure where it is. But, yeah, he made a great catch. And then we never threw the ball to Dwight on that play. We ran that play a million times during the year. And Bill made us practice it in training camp to throw that to him. We both thought he was crazy. Well, we never throw it to him. You're supposed to go down and set a pick and just throw the ball with Kai coming off the pick. It's simple. But little did we know how important it would be later in the Super Bowl. So.
Yeah. Hey, great to talk to you. Joe is going to be featured in Guinness TV spots, social media, other promotional activities in the months ahead. And hopefully we'll get a chance to have a beer together there, Joe. It's great to see you.
I think there's some coming your way.
Oh,
yeah, so hopefully
you buried the lead. You buried the lead, Joe. We're getting Guinness. All right.
Yeah, it's coming your direction.
Go Irish.
Yeah, been both sides. So happy to be a part of this partnership, and always great to talk to you.
Thank you, buddy.
And I just checking though, when you ran out of here, are you okay? Just want to make, you know, because I have my daughter left some diapers here in case if you need one.
Wow.
Run to the bathroom. I know you're getting older.
Wow.
So. Just checking to make sure you're okay.
Wow.
Everything's still working.
Yeah, it is. Sometimes it works too well, Joe. It works. Sometimes it works too often where you got to get up and go. So, but thank you for looking out for me. My best to Jennifer, and thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Always great to talk to you.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.